Good morning. We are here with Dr. Musetti. How are you, Rosanna?
I'm well. Happy New Year.
You too, Princess. Oh my gosh, you're off to a booming start. And none other than my sidekick, Julie Hamilton. Hey, Julie.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy New Year to everyone.
So what were you thinking? I mean, we are just diving into the deep end of the pool. Mm-hmm. Dr. Musetti has made some tough choices. Mm-hmm. She and the board, not her individually, but she and the board this year. And what were you thinking when you invited this controversial topic?
Yeah.
How is that? What are you thinking?
The PTA presidents from Mount George and from Yountville Elementary
School. Yes, we did.
On the show,
yes, we did.
Carrie Saxel and Earl Knecht. And they were fantastic. And they had a lot of great questions. And so I remember on the show, you said, Julie, we need to get the superintendent in here because we want to make sure that everybody has a seat at the table. And
right.
So,
we want to hear from both sides. And we don't want to be people that make judgment calls.
Right.
We want to be people that offer news. You know, back in the day, Dr. Musetti and Julie, back in the day, news was just that. It was news. And now news is not really news anymore. It's opinion. So, you know, depending on what you watch and what you listen to, it's all, oh, yay, 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 or it's all, oh, hate, hate, hate.
Yeah.
And on our show, we don't like to do either. We just like to report what people say and what the thoughts are and what's happening. So I was impressed when we had the other two on about the two schools that closed. I thought were very respectful.
Yeah.
The conversation was very supportive.
Absolutely. And I was saying to Dr. Musetti this morning, they even were so complimentary about Dr. Musetti. Remember that? They were saying, she is amazing, and she is a person who gets things done.
Yeah, and they felt that you listened.
Yes.
Even though the outcome is not what they wanted,
and
just for full disclosure, not what I wanted, but I didn't weigh in on it. But the outcome was schools had to close. And so we have hired you here to the city of Napa for those tough decisions.
Yes. Yep.
That's the job, you know, and it's like city council or anything else. You know, you have to weigh in. You have to make those tough decisions, even when sometimes it's not the popular choice. So
that's
why don't you just dive in the deep end of the pool and kind of share some thoughts and comments on your side. And then we'll jump into the questions because we have a bunch of questions posted on Facebook and we will get to those.
Sure.
And I did want to acknowledge something that we talked about last time on the show was that you've been at this district, you said, for 18 months.
That's right.
So many of the struggles or challenges you've inherited. They weren't created by choices that you made or whatever. Many of these things, just trying to inherit them and move forward with great progress and great hope for our future.
Smart
choices. I love that you're doing that.
Appreciate that. And I appreciate the complimentary commentary from the parents that were here. I do want to say it's been an intense 18 months onboarding into the district, given the circumstances that we're facing. However, you know, and there's been, of course, decisions that have elicited dissatisfaction from some of our stakeholders. Many of them are our parents and community members. I understand that. I honor it. There are emotional issues. They personally impact, you know, individual families and their children. And so I completely understand the emotion and the dissatisfaction because, you know, that's if you're a third grade parent at the time, you're really, really focused on your child in third grade. And that makes sense, and that's what we do as parents. That makes a lot of sense, right? But as the superintendent of schools here in the largest district in the county, who's facing declining enrollment, which means we're facing declining revenues at a very, very dramatic pace, I have to sort of hold the big picture. And the big picture is that Napa Valley Unified School District, as the largest district in the county, is really, really being affected by declining enrollment. Mm-hmm. We are not alone in the state. Approximately 70% of the districts in the state of California over the course of the next 5 to 7 years will be experiencing it.
I'm so glad you brought that up because we were talking before the show about other districts that you've been involved with that also are facing this huge declining enrollment. And we all know it.
We are not
because
alone.
So many of my friends have moved to Texas and Idaho, you know, and all over the state it's happening.
Yeah, I was at the gym this morning and I was watching the news and one of the pieces on, I think it was NBC News, they were just saying that it was the first time California was on the list of being on the top five states where people are actually leaving as opposed to coming. We're always at the top for people coming and migrating into the state because of the incredible job opportunities that California's always been
and
able to
weather.
Provide. Great
and weather.
Yes, absolutely.
Who wants
great
to
weather.
Shovel snow? I question all my friends that moved to Coeur d'Alene and Boise.
Yes, exactly. So the weather and the jobs, but we're actually on the migrating out list
today. We're on the decline.
And no one understands, or it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around the fact, like, well, what does that mean? One of the first sort of victims of that exit and migration from the state is we lose kids and we lose families. And that's often the dilemma because we have young families who want to start out. Those are our future kindergartners. They, you know, have small children and they're choosing to leave California because it's just not affordable. So the declining enrollment issue, people, of course, you know, you engage with the school district. It becomes frustrating because the school district will have to execute on decisions in response to the declining enrollment. And hopefully I'll be afforded the opportunity to explain why in NVUSD, because of the way we are funded as a school district, very different from how the other four districts are, of Valley the college. And the County Office of Education, they're all basic aid. And so those districts don't rely on enrollment in order to build their budget. In NVUSD, we do rely on enrollment. And, you know, I'll briefly explain that. But how it works is if a school district doesn't generate in their district lines, if we do not generate enough property tax to exceed what is the baseline in the state, right, which is about $12,000 per student once you add on some of the supplemental dollars that we get, especially for our historically underserved students. If you don't generate enough local property tax revenue, you rely on the state to help you meet that minimum base floor. The districts up Valley generate enough property tax, and so they get to keep all of their local property tax. In fact, they sort of even overflow beyond what the average $12,000 per student amount is, and they get to keep that. And actually, the less kids that are in the district, that creates a per pupil spending rate, right? Less kids, more per pupil, because they get to keep their sort of share. Their pie is a local pie.
Gotcha.
In Napa Valley Unified, because we don't meet that minimum in Napa, you know, from American Canyon to the city of Napa to Yountville, where our district boundaries are, we don't meet that. So we are not a basic aid district. We're what's called a local control funding formula district. We're the only one in the county, although we're the largest. We're the only one in the county. And the way that we get our, $11,000 to $12,000 per student from the state is through the trigger of enrollment. So every student is how we trigger the revenue from the state. We rely on the state to get us that per pupil rate. Mm-hmm. And so as the enrollment declines, it's very simple. As the enrollment declines in NVUSD, the revenue declines. So you can't run the same operation that you ran when you were a school district of 18,500 and you're then a district of 16,800 or a district that's going to become 15,000 students. You can't run the same operation because if you start doing the math, if you lose anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 students annually, you know, and this is an impact that happens annually, you're losing that's revenue loss. And so that's the pain and the pressure points of sort of having to face that reality. And the school district for a very long time, for almost two solid decades, was actually a growth district. And a mentor of mine always said, you know, as you prepare for these positions, growth, when there's growth, things are going really well.
Yeah.
And a lot of problems don't come to the surface. You don't have to necessarily, you know, you're not, they just don't surface because you're growing. And in school districts, growing means revenue. And so the last two decades, especially with the growth of the American Canyon region and that being part of our unified school district community, we've really been able to sort of, you know, not have to make a lot of tough decisions.
Sure.
Minus the period, of course, during the recession where all school districts, because, you know, we rely on Sacramento, and there was a huge recession and all school districts got cut and had reductions. Besides that, the school district's been growing, and so growth allows you to do all kinds of things that you can't do when you're in a dramatic decline.
Sure.
Yeah. So those are really great points. So you're here, and I have a few questions, and while they may appear as tough questions, I don't believe there are such a thing as tough questions. I think that they're just questions,
okay.
And I just want to come out of the chute with a tough one, and then I think everything will be a lot easier. So this is a question I have about American Canyon and the bond. So many people have asked me, especially when they saw you were going to be on the show today, they sent me some messages and texts about that bond in American Canyon that was just passed to build a new middle school, which now is not justifiable, right? Because the enrollment's not there, is what I understand. So what happens to that bond money? Do you just never take it? Are you able to take it and use it elsewhere? What's the kind of
the
backstory?
The bond is for the Napa Valley Unified School District. Measure H is our bond program. I always like to give people context, right? Because I think it helps folks understand.
Absolutely.
When the district was campaigning for the bond, and the bond passed in 2016, going back to that growth, right? If you're a district that's been spending a couple decades growing and you haven't really dealt with a dramatic enrollment decline, you're in a growth mode, right?
Sure,
so growth
sure.
mode, you're thinking, you know, we need to build schools where, you know, we have growing enrollment. And it's hard to sort of pick up on a pivot or a new trend that's emerging until maybe 2 or 3 years go by, right? And so the decline here in Napa Valley Unified actually started around that exact time. The seeds of the decline started right around that time.
Okay.
And so you can envision, right, because there's a lot of questions of like, why are we seeing this now? You know, hindsight's 2020. As the new superintendent who's only been here a year and a half, I get to benefit.
Right,
from
this bond was before you.
Yeah, it was before me, right? So at the time, during the campaign, there were obviously some commitments that were made. Some of the language in the measure talked about dealing with growth. And then all of a sudden, right, this pivot happens in our community where, you know, those cohorts of kids that are starting to sort of come up the system are much smaller. And the decline is becoming much more real. And so here I am several years later where launching bond projects is a process, and there's the Department of State Architects, and it doesn't happen instantly, right? So that was kind of all in motion. And then coupled now with a very different environment and context and different set of
landscape.
Variables. Yeah, and so to open up a school at a time, an additional school.
At a time you're closing schools.
At a time that you're closing schools, you know, I think from, it seems counterintuitive, right? You're declining enrollment. Usually you're not building schools for growth in a declining enrollment environment. To the contrary, you start to look and see, are we operating too many elementary schools for the number of elementary students that we have? Are we maximizing efficiencies in our facilities in order to be able to consolidate and run less campuses than we are? Because I go back to, if you're 18,500 students and all of a sudden you're 16,000,
yeah.
Why would anyone, you know, it's it's counterintuitive to think that we would run the same exact operation when our revenue is dependent upon that enrollment. Right.
So you know for a fact it's not wisdom at this time to build a middle school in American
Kindergarten.
And the board took action on that.
We're currently working through a reevaluation of Measure H, with that sort of being the new reality.
Yes.
And so approximately $50 million had been set aside in a bond implementation plan for the new middle school. And so we're in a reevaluation mode around that. And then we will determine how we will repurpose the $50 million. I think what's important for people to know is that there are really intense facilities needs all over this district.
Oh, yes.
We have some very, very antiquated schools. We have, even though the area of American Canyon has a premier beautiful new high school.
It's gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous. It's the Envy high school campus.
Yes, in California. I love that campus.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. It's an incredible, from a facility standpoint.
Yeah, because it's brand new, but the elementary schools are pale in comparison.
Yeah, and Napa Junction is, we had many of the bond dollars for Measure H had to respond almost like a mandatory, it was a mandatory issue when you have seismic issues where students are really at risk.
Sure.
So we had to rebuild snow. So a significant portion of Measure H went to the rebuild of snow.
Okay.
In response to the seismic issues. And so, then Napa Junction, which is an American Canyon school, they will be getting a brand new elementary school. They will be relocated. And so construction has broken the ground.
So all that will be a part of Measure.
That's
So that's American Canyon money staying in American Canyon.
Yeah, I think what's tricky is that I can't think about the district's dollars as Napa dollars or American Canyon dollars. That's not my job. My job as the superintendent of the Napa Valley Unified School District is to ensure that the district is unified, because we are a unified school district. And if we get into the business of sort of bifurcating ourselves, American Canyon this and Napa that, and we lose that sense of unification, then that will create a lot of inefficiencies. Yeah. And that's what we need to veer away from, especially in a non-growth setting, right?
Okay.
Especially when we're
declining. I totally agree with that, and I'm hearing what you're saying, but I just want to acknowledge to the American Canyon people who were so passionate for this bond because they believed in a new middle school. And so to address the American Canyon people, by saying that you repaired Snow School to seismic standards and that you are working on Napa, building a whole new Napa Junction school, that's saying a portion of this Measure H that American Canyon fought to pass and approve, you know, is helping them.
Absolutely, yeah. Both American Canyon and schools in the city of Napa will be touched by Measure H. And then Measure H, so we have to repurpose the dollars. We will be engaging. We've been assessing.
Great.
We've been assessing, engaging in a reevaluation. And, you know, when we're prepared and ready, we will proceed and engage with the community in order to communicate, elicit feedback on how we're going to proceed with the approximate $50 million. You know, but I go back to there's needs. I mean, this bond, I think what's also important for me to let people know is that there's been a lot of critique of bonds and the previous bonds and this bond. I mean, bonds are always an area of scrutiny. I don't think you should have this job if you don't expect that and work with that, because it just is what it is. I think that what I always like to emphasize is that, you know, California public schools, and I said this many times when I was dealing with the construction issue in American Canyon, when I was dealing with the school closure issues, one of the reasons we're sitting in you know, this state of affairs is declining enrollment, declining revenue. However, we also have to hold the big picture, and the big picture is that California schools are underfunded. Mm-hmm. If you're not a basic aid district, like I described us, we are not basic aid. We are local control funding formula. We get $12,000 per kid. Up Valley basic aid, it's almost double. You know, it's, you know, don't quote me, but it's somewhere between, you know,
20,000.
Yeah, about $20,000. So it's almost double. You know, the state of New York, almost double of what we spend here in California, despite being the multi-billion economy, the dollar economy that we are here in this state, we do not fully fund education. We just don't. And so by not funding education, one of the ways that there are inequities in the state of California is through the local tax measures. And so it is communities that get behind, okay, California is not going to fully fund, where obviously 12,000 isn't enough. And that revenue generation, we're expected to make things happen in the classroom for our students, but we're also expected to maintain all of our facilities, to do all of our deferred maintenance, you know, make everything happen with this underfunded per pupil rate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, districts that have great facilities are often where the local community has said, we're going to step in and we're going to close the gap, because we understand that the California as a state is not closing it for us. So we kind of then have to, you know, rely on the local community in order to do that. So without bond dollars, upgrading facilities, you know, we get into these long cycles where, you know, roofs can't get done, you know, pavement can't get done, just back to just these basics of school facilities that we need done. And so this last bond was challenging because so many of the dollars had to go to the mandatory response to the seismic issues, right?
And
so building a school is a lot of money. It's it's $50 million. You can do a lot of roofs with $50 million, right?
Yeah.
And so it's challenging. It's challenging that, you know, sometimes you've got to use the bond to respond to these types of issues. We needed to get our kids safe. They cannot, you know, obviously we've got to respond. We're in that, you know, we have fires here, we have earthquakes. So that adds a whole other layer of school facility safety issues that we need to focus on. And so we still have tons of need, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of just need. So we have to be as strategic as we can and intentional as we can with our bond dollars. And, you know, we appreciate the fact that folks voted yes on Measure H. I know it was close. That was before my time. But I just, what would have been the alternative had we not had Measure H? And we're in this conundrum with declining enrollment. How would we have taken care of those school builds in seismic? How would we have done some of the roofs we're about to do? Like, we would have been in a much a more troublesome circumstance. The other last thing I want to add about Measure H is that we are taking care of some issues that will impact every student at every school with Measure H. And so, again, thank you to the Measure H voters. Because of Measure H, we folded in there, which most school districts also do this because the state of California underfunds its schools. And so we're expected to get technology infrastructure and classroom technology into the hands of our students. That's the expectation in education today. Had it not been for Measure H, this district would have continued to be in a very antiquated state when it comes to its technology. And so we've been able to upgrade all of our technology infrastructure, which has been great. And now we're getting tools in every single classroom. Our district will be one-to-one in terms of device for students. And every classroom, from our special education classrooms to our general education classrooms to our high school classrooms to our kindergarten classrooms, will have front of classroom projection in order to be able to you know, upgrade it. All system, you know, a standard across the district. We adopted Promethean boards, and so every classroom, one of the things that I realized when I first got here, the technology had really was just all over the place.
Haphazard.
Some schools had it, some schools didn't, and so because of Measure H, we've been able to implement bond projects that will impact every student, every classroom, and every building.
That's awesome.
So that's really important. And then, of course, safety. So we're launching now, which is huge. We're launching now video cameras, security cameras, fencing, A lot of perimeter fencing in order to deal with a lot of the vulnerabilities that come today with operating schools, because school safety is such an issue. And that, again, will touch a majority of our campuses. And given our current funding conundrum due to that declining enrollment, declining revenue, without the local measure, we would not have been able to, you know, it would have been a real struggle to try and take care of these critical district needs.
Wow, those are really great. Did you have a comment before I jump back in?
I was just going to say that I'm really glad you brought that up, because I saw a lot of people saying, why are we rebuilding snow when we're closing two campuses? And, you know, I didn't know that it was a seismic issue. And as I think all three of us in this room have been teachers in the classroom, that, you know, some of the issues that you're talking about, teachers are dealing with on a daily basis, like the safety and the roofs and all of that. And we're dealing with these difficult things on a daily basis that sort of impedes your job a lot of times.
That's right.
If you don't have the tools that you need, it does impede the way that you're able to work with the students and how you're able to provide for them. And so as a former teacher, I have a good understanding of,
right,
a better understanding of why these decisions were made.
Exactly.
You know, and how that is impacting the students, even just providing the right resources and the safety that they need.
Absolutely.
You know?
That is so
basics,
important.
Right? They're just operational basics. And as former educators, I mean, teachers, principals, we're so good. Educators are so good at, like, grinding through barriers,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, but the bottom line is that we do have to sort of raise the standard. Like,
yes,
it's not okay to have a leaky roof at a school. Like, we need to fix that, right? And as long as California doesn't give us the money to do what we need to do to educate the whole child, maintain all of our facilities, we're going to have to continue at the local level to set priorities, to basically say, in this cycle of the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to choose to address these issues. And then you hope that in that next cycle, we can address others, because the bottom line is that, you know, we're resource starved in California for local control funding.
So we're on that same hot seat you're on at City Council,
right,
with being faced with building a new City Hall, because our current City Hall and Police Department,
right,
is not built to seismic standards. And if you want to build a new house, all the rules that I apply to you, mm-hmm, we do not have those rules applied to our city, and our city employees go to work every day in peril, mm, because of an earthquake.
They are at risk
every single day. And yet when we talk about building a new facility and we talk about $65 million for a new building, then the community goes ballistic. Well, what about the sidewalks? What about the streets? Well, we have 300 employees going to work every day that are not safe, and it's a conundrum.
Yeah.
You know,
they're tough circumstances.
Those are tough,
yeah,
circumstances, and
tough,
and they really are. So one of the questions that people wrote in and asked is, what do we plan to do with the property of, mm-hmm, these closed schools? Is that something we're going to sell to work on other,
yeah,
buildings?
So we took action on this in October. It's fairly recent, and so, you know, we're currently evaluating both campuses, and the committee, we used the 7-11 committee, which is,
yes,
a committee established,
yes,
in the education code for school districts that are looking to do anything with surplus property. They have to erect a 7-11 committee. We chose to engage with the 7-11 committee sort of beyond and above what is required. We used them to be part of the decision around school closure, because we knew that if schools were closed, eventually those properties would probably potentially land in 7-11 committee space, and that that committee of participants would be part of the decision making on what we do with the surplus property. So staff is currently evaluating. We're in that evaluation process. And then we will, when ready, we will reconvene the 7-11 committee, and staff will present recommendations to the 7-11 committee. They then are an advisory committee, and then that committee will take their advisory recommendations based on what they hear from staff to the school board, and then and then decisions are finalized there on what we do with the properties. We have some outstanding needs. So when I arrived here, we have a Stonebridge Charter School, which is at the old Carneros property. So there were some school closures about a decade ago. Before I got here, the district did close some of the mountain schools and also closed Carneros. And Stonebridge Charter School, which is, that's when districts have facilities available. They are part of what we do with charter schools that are authorized by us, is we have to provide them facilities. So, you know, when I got here, there was a lot of sort of confusion around how charters work. What does it mean that we're the authorizing, the charter authorizer? And so one of the first pieces, one of kind of the first issues, there were several, was the expectation was that Stonebridge, that Carneros property, also had seismic issues, and that we would potentially engage in some sort of a rebuild on that campus. Those that are local and follow local news know from a few years ago.
Oh, that, yeah, that was also a new fault that we just found.
Yeah, it was a fault post that earthquake, and then it was complicated by the fact that there's a gas line there as well. So it's really, in many ways, that property, once all that kind of gets exposed and you're aware of it, I have asserted that doesn't seem like the best property to invest in when you've got the combination of a fault line and a gas line, and then children are involved, right, in a school. And so
There's the emotional, then there's the logical.
Yeah.
You see, there's logic. We shouldn't build our house right on this fault line and right on this gas line, because it's in the next earthquake, which will happen, it could explode. So that's logic. And then there's emotional. Yeah, but that's where I lived and that's where I grew up and that's my homeland.
Yeah, and all those things kind of come into play, right?
And then you have a volcano.
Right. And you know, the district, shortly upon my arrival in the first like 90 days, one of the things that I did was kind of assess safety. And we've been reassured. We've had studies done. I went out along with some of my staff and presented to the Stonebridge community to ensure them that, you know, statistically, it's, you know, we have, you know, vetted all the options, and they, you know, they're safe, that, you know, there wasn't any immediate sort of risk. But just in the long term, when you've got a property that has a gas line and a fault line, and you start to do work there, you just never really kind of know, you could be opening up a huge can of worms. It's just not an optimal property. And so we have communicated that with Stonebridge Charter School, and that we knew that we were going to have to go down the road of potentially reducing the number of elementary schools that were operating because of the declining enrollment, and that we were going to let that work sort of unfold. So now we do have a couple of vacant properties, and so we have a process, a very it's a compliance-oriented process through Proposition 39, where as the authorizer, we offer facilities to the charter school. And so we're in the midst of preparing all of that. And so,
as well as the 7-Eleven, which will evaluate if we should sell them and
The 7-Eleven committee will not make a decision around charter school facilities.
That is
an administrative function of the district administration. And so, you know, we're engaging in that process. As soon as the facilities offer is made to Stonebridge, then we will know what are our surplus properties. And then we will pivot and shift to the 7-Eleven committee hearing staff recommendations around what we do with surplus property.
So quick new question. Are we saving money because of the closures of Mount George and Yountville?
Yes, we
are. How much money are we saving?
You know, well, it's really simple. I'm not going to quote numbers because I, you know, don't have spreadsheets in front of me. But I'll just kind of go through the logic of it all. We have one less principal.
Okay.
We have less
custodial. So there's $250,000 dollars.
Yeah, we have less custodial, right? We are. We have less utilities. We have less maintenance on our property.
Did we absorb those people into other schools?
That none of that has been decided yet. So as
what
as well, yeah, as vacancies. So you know, there'll be some natural attrition that will happen.
And some natural retirement, yeah, and then some applications for new jobs in other districts.
But that position goes away. So the principal position of Mount George, the principal position of Yountville, goes away. And then another thing that happens when you're operating small schools, for example, if you have low enrollment, but you got to keep a kindergarten there, you may have a kindergarten that is way below our class size, right? So if you have a kindergarten of 15 kids, you have to kind of keep the kindergarten there because you're not going to eliminate the kindergarten program. That's just an example. I'm just using a general example.
Sure.
When you are at schools that are of slightly larger size, right, you have a second kindergarten class, you can collapse, you can consolidate. And both many of our schools, you have to do some of that through combination classrooms. Your former educators, a lot of us know what that looks like. But we are going to, when you start kind of consolidating in the way that we have, we are going to shift teaching positions, so the teaching positions follow the students, but there will also be some natural attrition of teaching positions just because we're no longer running some small class sizes at some small schools.
Right. So if you had 15 in each kindergarten and now you combine those two kindergartens somewhere else, that's one teacher, not two teachers.
Yeah, basically. I mean, we never have a kindergarten of 30 because we have a class size max. But essentially, the students get more absorbed
in
different places. And so, you know, yes, through reduction of certificated teaching staffing, which we will be reducing teachers. We will be reducing teachers for next year.
Are you reducing teachers across the board at all
across
schools?
The district, yes.
Oh, across the district,
because
okay.
the district is, we're responding to declining enrollment. Okay. The district has been reducing teaching positions at elementary for a couple of years now because the enrollment decline has been in elementary. Yeah. It's been hitting elementary. It's been real. It's been real where the kindergartners didn't come in. So over the last few years, the decline started a few years ago. The students, those cohorts, smaller cohorts of kids are now moving through the system. So what does that mean? That means that now your secondary schools are going to start to feel the decline of enrollment, right?
Okay.
Because the smaller cohorts are starting to move through.
So
there's going to be, reduction of teaching positions due to the natural attrition.
So how are we going to get these kids to their new schools? I mean, does everybody qualify for busing? I mean, we had kids in Yountville that will now have to come to Napa, right?
Yeah, so we have been working through a centralized enrollment team at the district office, and we put some things in place to work sort of from a priority standpoint with families that were impacted at both Yountville and Mount George. We have been trying to give them sort of their first priority choice as much as possible in order, you know, for them to
Where
will my child go for the 2020-2021 school year?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's...
we're fast crushing in on August.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's here already, right? You know, we're in the current school year, but our district team is...
Yeah, we're in August. I mean, how are we going to get those kids from Yountville to Napa schools?
Right. So the one group of students that will get transportation services are the students because Yountville being, you know, where it's located.
5 miles north.
And the school where we sort of took the resident Yountville students. Yountville only had approximately 40 or so resident families. Many of them were open enrolled that were coming from all over the district. It was true for both schools. Both schools were very open enrolled, which means that parents are leveraging choice. They aren't necessarily residential kids.
We're talking about like 40 kids.
Yeah, so we are obligated to provide transportation because we have now displaced. They don't have a local elementary school.
Right.
And so their new local elementary school, I mean, they have one. It's a new one, and it's Willow Elementary, but there is distance there between Yountville
Where
and Willow.
Where is Willow?
It's the old El Centro campus on...
Oh, Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Beautifully renovated new school.
It is renovated. Yep. That's a pretty, and so the street's all fixed up,
that's
too.
That's another Measure H project. Okay. So that was okay. a renovated project, and it's also a school.
So that's where that's the first Yountville. Expectation that the Yountville children would go mm-hmm. there to El Centro. Oh, that's not that far.
To
it's
Willow.
Right,
yep.
Yeah, to Willow on El Centro.
Although our district is an open enrollment district, and so parents can choose
a different school, but now they're going to drive the child. That would be their, because that would be their open choice.
They will. If they choose to not take the option.
Yes.
That's right, that they would drive.
Okay. Oh, that is a beautiful suggestion. And, I didn't begin this show correctly because I always begin with an opening question and I missed it. So, Rosanna, are you married and do you have kids?
I do. My husband and I just celebrated our 21st year.
Oh, honey, marriage. You don't even look. Oh my gosh, you're gorgeous.
Yeah, no,
21st
you.
Year
Thank
of
you.
Marriage.
Yes. So we, 21 years. I have an 18-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son.
Aww.
My daughter just came home for the first time from
Aww.
Chicago. She's Aww. At the University of Chicago.
Oh,
she's a
law
freshman.
Degree?
That's great.
She's
what?
A freshman in college. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so she just started her college journey.
And, oh, that is exciting.
Yeah, that's really exciting. It was nice to have her home. So two
and
kids.
And so where do you guys live?
We live in Oakland, so right
and
now I'm a commuter superintendent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
yes.
I've been commuting for the last year and a half.
Oh, girlfriend,
yeah.
That is
wow.
a beast.
No, it's a little different.
But at least you are commuting the correct direction, I think.
I am. And I think like most anyone who's a parent understands, at the time that I was offered the position, my daughter was going into her senior year in high school, and my, son's in middle school.
Oh, yeah,
schooler.
You're not going to change that.
Yeah, well, we're considering all of our options, but... Yeah, he's finishing up eighth grade, and my daughter left. She graduated. I let her finish her senior
Right,
year
so you're still
friends.
Thinking about this eighth grader,
yeah.
about uprooting
yeah.
and introducing into a whole new world. Now, and so your husband works, I guess.
And my husband works in San Francisco.
Oh, my
gosh.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, so the commute is brutal from here to there.
We have a lot to think about. Yeah, the community, you're new in our community, and it's always interesting to know a little bit more about mm-hmm. the personal side, what makes you tick. Do you have a dog?
I have a dog. I do.
Oh,
I
I'm so excited. You're my kind of person. Hold
early
on.
This morning.
Okay. There's some applause. I love to, I'm a dog person. What kind of dog is it?
We have a pit bull.
Really?
Yeah,
really
sweet one.
So it goes back to how you raise a child, how you raise a dog.
Yeah.
You raise the dog to be loving and great, and it's loving and great.
He's loving. He's been raised with my kids. We've had him for, my son's 13 and Blue is 12. So.
That's precious.
He's an exceptional family dog.
That is awesome. Okay.
Fun animal.
So I usually open with that question.
I just jumped into all the hate and the rhetoric,
and I apologize. I usually start on a more friendly note. So we covered busing. So your son is going to school in Oakland then.
Yeah, so we're assessing. We'll see what happens this spring. So okay.
Could we talk? I know we only have like 7 minutes left.
I'm no way.
At the clock.
What?
Yeah, it's
no.
Done. Yep.
It's Are
done.
You
it's
kidding?
It's gone by so quickly.
Oh my.
Yeah. But I did want to ask you what you want to tell us about the future of the school district. What are you working on, and what can we be looking forward to? I saw there was a branding thing came out in the paper.
What was that branding thing?
Yeah, so we are working on branding. I think some people, wonder, if the district's in declining enrollment, why would they even engage in branding? And, and I know sometimes that those sorts of decisions feel counterintuitive from the external perspective, but one of the things that I need to work on assertively, I think it's one of the reasons that the school board hired me, is that, they had become aware of their declining enrollment situation. And I was able to speak to some of the work that I had done in my previous school district, which is when you hit a declining enrollment sort of context and environment, it's important to think about, can we stem some of the hemorrhaging? And so one of the things that we're going to be looking at is kind of revisiting from a policy perspective, You know, we have a lot of people, I'm one of them, that sit on 29 in the morning, who work here, who are employed in the Valley, but yes, can't afford to live here.
Right.
And so as a lot of the time, parents would love the opportunity to be closer to their child if their place of work is here in the Valley. Then potentially they want to bring their children to school here. That might be an option. It's not an option for everybody. Some people want their children at their neighborhood schools back home. Some families want their to be close to their to their child during the course of the school day. So we're going to be looking at the possibility of, you know, the enrollment decline here in Napa, I have to be really honest, is pretty dramatic. We're looking at losing 250 to 300 students every year. And it is projected to continue to happen over the course of the next 5 to 7 years. Wow. So that is the reality. Can we completely turn that around? Probably not, unless things change with affordable housing and other issues that are kind of not my realm, right? Yes. Like, that's not my world. My world is to educate the students that are here, give them a top-notch educational experience. Yeah. If things change potentially and there's less migration out and more people are moving in and have kids here, then great. But that is the reality that we're facing. It's
the printer. Something's playing.
It's the printer in the background.
Oh,
here.
What is it?
What is it?
The printer's on and you can hear it in the microphone.
Yeah, so but we'll look at marketing our school district, right? Because parents are shoppers. Parents want to know if there's options available to them. And so part of that is that, you know, we might want to consider looking at our inter-district policy, seeing, you know, is there any way to, you know, prioritize and support families who work in the Valley that don't live in the Valley but might want to bring their children
right,
here.
Right, because it's like 30,000 people a day or something like that come into the Valley,
some
right?
Crazy statistic
high,
on 29.
Really
yes.
high.
Yeah, yeah. And so thus the bumper-to-bumper traffic, the longest 10 miles in the state of California sometimes, right?
Unless you're on the 405 in L.A.
I was going to say, don't you talk to me about traffic. I'm an L.A. girl.
I'm originally from L.A.
I know. So. I know traffic. Yeah. This is
we
not traffic.
We whine here in the Bay Area.
Oh, we whine in the Bay Area.
Yeah,
we do
like,
not.
Yeah,
we
what?
Do not know. You guys up here, I'm like, shut up. Yeah. There are two cars in front of you at the red light, and you're like complaining about traffic.
So we're going to, so, you know, if you want to market the school district, then it's important to have strong branding.
So you're getting out a vision. So you have a vision for something. Yeah. So you're getting those steps in order to market the way that you need to market to hopefully attract
the
right audience.
So quick question. You inherited the Indian logo mess.
Yeah, I mean, the decision was made, so like, I inherited
and
it.
So
done.
Here is an enormous expense on our school district. New uniforms, new letterhead, new logo. New. I mean, talking.
A lot of cost.
Oh, phenomenal cost. So, you know, it's a done deal. It's over. And we have a new logo.
The Grizzlies.
What? The Grizzlies. What? Yeah, I said we have the Grizzlies until the environmentalists come out and say, don't promote bears. That's just wrong, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But what advice do you have? Because we have other schools with logos and names. And what can you do to kind of integrate a concept that is nonpartisan, non-emotional, non-specific?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be really honest. I mean, that was a policy decision that was made. It's my job to implement
and
execute on the policy decisions that the school board makes, and that was done before my arrival, so we have been executing on the implementation of that. That's the expectation, and so that work is happened.
But when you're thinking about branding,
I'm looking at branding the school district, and so my focus is Napa Valley Unified School District, and you know, what does that look like? So
open to all, or
you know,
whatever.
We want to maintain a lot of the asset that we have here, which is a strong local connection to our schools. I mean, NVUSD, one of the things that I've loved about coming here and being here, and I've said this many times, I think I've said it on this very microphone, is that the natural support that organic support that the community has for its schools is pretty extraordinary.
Pretty strong.
This is my fourth school district. It is special. It is unique. When all the dissatisfaction emerges and folks are upset because I'm making decisions, I always stop, pause, and reflect and remind myself that it is a data point that the community cares.
They're passionate about
it. I can work with that all day long. It's very, very challenging to be in an environment where there's a disconnect between the school district and the community.
Yeah.
And I've been in positions, places, moments where I've had to like try and drum up support.
Oh, wow.
And here I have felt that naturally the community has strong support of its schools. So I feel very blessed and privileged to serve here as a superintendent when that's the case.
Yes.
Does it make the work more intense? Of course it does.
Yes.
But that's, you know, that's the job.
And Parents care.
If I were, you know, to try to avoid that engagement or the opinions or whatnot and just, you know, want the alternate reality, I would be in some ways saying that I don't want strong support for our schools. And that's absolutely not true. We want strong support. We want strong community engagement. So branding, you know, it is about building, you know, a kind of a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. In my previous school district, we did increase the enrollment dramatically in a very short period. And part of that solution package is kind of marketing your school district. And if you're going to market your school district with a lot of intentionality and some strategic marketing plan, you have to make sure that you have a good brand, and that the whole system.
What was your brand in your school district before?
There's the visual piece, and then you know there's the tagline. And
what was the tagline?
Tradition and innovation.
Okay, so we need to close. But anybody who wonders if parents are passionate about our Napa schools, anybody that wonders that question, I would say to them, you have never been to the Napa Vintage Playoff football game.
The big game.
You have never been to the big game.
There's nothing
like it. If you've ever wondered about local parent involvement in schools, just go to the big game because every single person in Napa is there. They might not be at Super Bowl. They might not be at baseball playoffs or whatever, but everybody is at the football big game.
It's in our family calendar.
I know. It's just you've got to be at the big game. And I have to do half on each side,
I've
got foster kids, 200 foster boys, teen boys have lived in my house. And I have boys that have played for Vintage and for Napa. Aww. So we need to sign off. Closing thought or comment, you got 2 seconds.
No, thank you for the opportunity. I'm committed here to continue to embrace the challenges and do the hard work because, you know, that's what we have to do because we have to keep our district viable.
Parents rock.
Yeah, our parents rock, and it's an honor and a privilege to serve here. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Dr. Rosanna Musetti, Superintendent, Napa Valley Unified School District. I'm your host today, Talk So Kids Listen, Doris Gentry. We'll see you next Monday. We have a great show lined up. Julie Hamilton, my sidekick. You have a great day, Napa. We'll see you next time. Woohoo!